Hello, Mr. President. Thank you very much for providing Fox News with this opportunity for an interview. I'm joined here by my colleague, reporter Greg Palcott, and we're very interested in proceeding. As you know, there's been a number of breaking news stories which we need to discuss with you. The UN has just released its chemical weapon report. My colleague, Greg Palcott, will be discussing that with you in a moment. I want to talk to you about other major developments regarding the chemical weapons plan, which has been agreed to by the U.S. and the Russian government. Do you agree with this plan to secure and to eventually destroy the chemical weapons?
Last week, we joined the international agreement of preventing the WMD, chemical WMD. And part of this agreement, the main part, is to not to manufacture these armaments, not to store, and not to use, and of course not to distribute. And part of it is to get rid of those materials, the chemical materials. So of course when we are part now of this agreement, we have to agree on that chapter.
You have to agree on?
On getting rid of all these armaments, I mean to destroy.
Why do you agree now?
No, actually it's not now. If you go back 10 years ago, when we were a non-permanent member of the United, of the Security Council in 2003, we proposed to the United Nations, to Security Council, Syrian proposal is to get rid of the WMD from the Middle East, to have a chemical free zone or WMD free zone in the Middle East. And actually the United States opposed that proposal. So as conviction, we wanted to see our region free of WMD, all kind of WMD, because it's very volatile region. It's always on the verge of anarchy and wars. So that's why we cannot say that we agreed now.
Well, we know that President Obama and Secretary Kerry have said in the past that you were lying. Now, that's their words, not mine, when you said that you didn't have any chemical weapons. A few days ago in an interview with Russia Channel 24, you admitted you had chemical weapons stockpiles. Now, I just want to make sure we're clear here before we go forward. Do you or do you not have chemical weapons?
First of all, regarding what Obama and Kerry said, I dare them to say that we said no once. We never said it.
You never said?
No. We never said no. We never said yes. But we always say it's classified issue. We don't have to discuss it. And if we want to talk about it, we say if. And if means you may have it, you may not. So this is blatant lie.
Okay, but can you tell us now, do you have chemical weapons or don't you?
Yes, when we joined the treaty last week, it means that we have, and we said that. So it's not a secret anymore.
So as far as the American people, you will agree that you do have a stockpile of chemical weapons?
Well, that's why we joined the international agreement, in order to get rid of these.
Now, my colleagues, my former colleagues on Capitol Hill, are kind of skeptical about your agreement with this plan. They say it's just a stalling tactic. Is it?
A stalling tactic, what's it, to join the agreement?
Yeah, that you're just stalling right now for time, that you really don't have any intention of going along with the plan. Are you stalling?
When you join the agreement, you have mechanism, and you have to obey these mechanisms. And according to the history of Syria, we never made agreement with any party in this world, and we didn't fulfill what we have to do, our role in that agreement, never.
So you would say that President Obama then can trust you to follow through?
I don't think that President Obama should trust me first. The Syrian people should trust me, not President Obama. That's okay. Second, when you talk about agreements and international relations, you have mechanisms. And those mechanisms should be based on objective criteria. So if you want to trust or not trust, watch this country, see if they obey those mechanisms and those rules or not. This is where you can trust him or not. So it's not personal relation.
I understand. So you're under a tight time deadline. Are you going to be able to provide the list that is part of the agreement,
exactly.
A list of chemical
weapons? Exactly, it is part. You should provide a list of the arsenal that you have to the organization of the chemical weapons.
And are you open? Are you ready to open chemical weapons sites to international inspection?
We didn't say that we are joining partially that agreement or that organization. We joined fully. We send the letter, we send the documents, and we are committed to the full requirements of this agreement.
Well, would you be ready to let our Fox News cameras have access to some of the chemical weapons site so that the American people will be able to see for themselves? Is that possible?
In Syria, we have institutions, we have rules, we have conditions. So we have to go back to this institution to ask them for that request. And after they study the request, they can say yes or not. But it's not about the president to take that decision alone. So we have institution. You can do that after this interview. You can ask for permission.
Can you destroy these chemical weapons quickly? And if not, why not?
I think it's a very complicated operation technically. And it needs a lot of money. Some estimated about a billion for the Syrian stockpile. We're not expert in that regard. But that's the estimates that we've had recently. So quickly depends. You have to ask the experts, what do they mean by quickly? Because it has certain schedule. It needs a year, maybe a little bit less or a little bit more. So well, what do you mean by quickly?
Since it is the United States which demanded that you give up chemical weapons, would you be prepared to turn over your chemical weapons to the U.S. government for the purposes of safely destroying those weapons?
As I said, it needs a lot of money. It needs about $1 billion. It's very detrimental to the environment. If the American administration is ready to pay those money and to take the responsibility of bringing toxic materials to the United States, why don't they do it? But of course, it's going to be in cooperation with the specified organization in the United Nations.
But you're prepared to hand them over at some point for the safe destruction of them?
Doesn't matter where. As I said, at the end, if you're going to destroy them, doesn't matter where they go.
Are there any conditions?
No, we don't have any condition to send it anywhere. At the end, if it's going to be destroyed, it could be destroyed anywhere. It's, as I said, it's very detrimental to the environment. So whoever country is ready to take the risk of those materials, let them take it.
I just have one final question before I give it over to my colleague, Reporter Greg. Do you have a security agreement with the Russian government that if and when you give up your chemical weapons, that you, in fact, will be protected? So that you're not vulnerable to attacks, because we know there are other nations which gave up their weapons and then they were attacked.
You know, the Russian rule politically was very efficient during the crisis in Syria, during the last 2.5 years. And they vetoed 3 times in the Security Council. So actually, they protected Syria politically. They don't have to have a security agreement with Syria regarding this. It's not about only about the army and the war. It's about politics, first of all. So I think they are doing their job without having this agreement.
So just to summarize, you do have chemical weapons. You're prepared to go along with the plan to destroy them, and that you're prepared to cooperate with the international community in that.
Again, as I said, what you mentioned, all are part of the international agreement. And when we agreed to join this agreement, we want to fully cooperate with this agreement, not partially. I think this is very clear.
Greg.
Great. Thank you, Dennis. Mr. President, this is so important. Let me just follow up on just one or two points and then move on. Again, no conditions. You will agree to this plan to destroy your chemical weapons. You had put conditions on this in the past week or so, but no conditions.
The only condition that the agreement will entail and propose and provide.
Okay.
So now we are going to discuss the details with the international organization. So I don't have all the details to discuss it with you now. And I'm not the expert. We have specialized people to discuss the details. But in general, as headlines, whenever we join agreement, as Syria, we are always committed to those agreements.
Your problem was that there was a threat of force coming from the United States. There's still discussion of the so-called Chapter 7 resolution being put forward to the UN, which would include the possibility of force. Would that be a deal breaker for you if that went forward?
What was the deal breaker?
Chapter 7 resolution in the UN, which allows bodies in the UN to use force if you are not complying.
Yeah, there's misunderstanding that we agreed upon this agreement because of the American threat. Actually, if you go back before the G20, before the proposal of this initiative, the Russian initiative, the American threat wasn't about handing over the chemical arsenal. It was about attacking Syria in order not to use the arsenal again. So it's not about the threat. Syria never obeyed any threat. Actually, we responded to the American, to the Russian initiative and to our need and to our conviction. So whether they have Chapter 7 or don't have Chapter 7, this is politics between the great countries.
So that's irrelevant to you?
No, irrelevant. No. We obey because we want to obey. We have completely different incentives.
And again, that time frame, which Dennis mentioned, 1 week to come up with a full accounting of your chemical weapons, November for the first inspectors to come in, mid-2014 for all your chemical weapons to be destroyed. That's an ambitious timetable, even by expert standards, but you think that is doable?
Yeah, but we have to discuss it, to discuss these details with the organization first.
So you have to discuss
second,
that first.
Yeah, this is first. Second, the time is not our problem. It's the problem of the organization. How much time do they need to implement these agreements?
So you don't necessarily sign on to that time.
The only thing that we have to do is to provide the information and to make them accessible to our sites, which is not a problem. We can do it tomorrow. We don't have any problem.
You could do it tomorrow.
Yeah, of course, we don't have a problem. The problem is how much fast they can be in getting rid of any chemical material, because this is a very complicated situation. It's not about will. It's about techniques. So only experts can answer your questions.
Which leads me to my last question on Dennis's topic, and that is, that's exactly what some people are saying, that this is just a ruse, just a game, because it is so difficult. Experts say it will be so difficult to get rid of these chemical weapons, especially in a war situation like this. This is indeed buying you a lot of time.
Even if you don't have war, it is difficult. Even if you have all the requirements afforded by every party, it takes time to get rid of.
So you're saying this could take years?
As I said, we don't have experience in that regard, but some say it takes 1 year. I didn't say years. As I heard, it takes about 1 year, maybe a little bit less, a little bit more.
Thank you, Mr.
But at the end, we have to see the expert, and they will tell us.
Okay. Let's go on to the latest breaking news. There's a lot of breaking news in this region right now, and that's the just-released UN report on the chemical weapon attack last month in the outskirts of Damascus right now. According to this report, and this is the report you said you were waiting for, you said you didn't want to hear the U.S., you didn't want to hear U.K., you didn't want to hear France, you want the U.N. to speak. Mm-hmm. And they have spoken, and they have said, and I quote, "There is clear and convincing evidence that the nerve gas sarin has been used." Mm-hmm. And they base this on environmental, chemical, medical samples. They say that killing happened on a relatively large scale. That killing included children. Do you agree with this assessment?
They have the samples, and they're supposed to be objective. We didn't have any formal report. But the question, if I agree about the use of sarin gas...
Now, do you agree with the assessment that a chemical weapon attack occurred on the outskirts of Damascus on August 21st?
That the information that we have, but information is different from evident.
It's different?
Yeah, it's different.
So you disagree with the UN report?
No, I don't disagree. You have to wait till you have evidence. You can agree and disagree when you have the evidence. You
should. They have the evidence. They've interviewed 40, 50 people on the ground.
Yeah, we have to discuss caregivers. The evidence with them. We have to discuss it with them because they are going back. They haven't finished their mission yet. They are going back, and we have to discuss it with them. We have to see the details. But we cannot disagree without having the opposite evidence. So nobody said that it's not used, because in March, we invited the delegation to Syria because the sarin gas was used in March. We had the evidence that it was used in March.
And we'll get into that in a second. I wanted to ask you about
that. When I talk as official, I can talk about the evidence that I have.
Okay, but they put out a 38-page report. I mean, it's been posted since yesterday. I don't know whether you've had a chance to look at it.
We have to look at it. We have to discuss it before saying
whether they are correct or not.
Yeah, okay. It's only yesterday evening.
Let's go hypothetical then. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has said that this is, in fact, a war crime, that it is despicable, that it is a grave violation of international law. If that event happened, as they are saying it did happen, would it be despicable? Would it be a violation of international law?
That's self-evident, of course.
Self-evident.
Of course, that's self-evident. It is despicable. It's a crime.
Because I'm sure you have seen the videos that we have seen of the child gagging on the ground or the people
on the floor. No one has verified the credibility of the videos and the pictures.
Exactly.
No one verified. The only verified things are the samples that the delegation go and took. Samples of blood and other things from the soil and so on.
Which is what they say they have.
But you cannot build a report on videos if it's not verified.
But they are basing it on the blood samples.
Especially as we live in a world of forgery for the last 2.5 years regarding Syria. You have a lot of forgery on the internet.
Now there's a last key element to this UN report. And while the UN inspectors did not lay blame, that is, they did not place culpability for the attack, there are many experts interpreting this report, some that I've spoken to in the last 12 hours, that frankly say this attack looks firmly like an attack coming from your government, from the Syrian government. Hmm. They point to a few things. They say it was a large amount of gas, sarin gas, maybe as much as a ton. The rebels could not have had that. Hmm. They say the type of rocket, an M14 artillery, a 330 millimeter, never used by the rebels before, that they needed large vehicles to send these rockets up. The rebels don't have that. And maybe most importantly, they point to the trajectory of the rockets. They say that they were able to trace the rockets back from the impact point to where they came from. And in two different occasions, this is according to the UN, they say that the start point was Quezon Mountain, the headquarters of the Republican Guard. Mm. What do you say to that?
Everything you mentioned is part of the report.
Excuse me, sir?
Everything you mentioned, all these points, are part of the report?
These points are all part of the report. These are all facts.
No, the report didn't mention anything regarding the Republican Guards or things like this.
They said they gave the azimuth tracking of the trajectory, and people have extrapolated from the azimuth track that is where it was coming from, northwestern Damascus. Yeah.
First of all, the sarin gas called the kitchen gas. Do you know why? Because anyone can make sarin in his house.
They said it's very high quality, higher quality than even used in Iraq by Saddam Hussein, your neighbor at the time.
First of all, any rebel can make sarin. Second, we know that all those rebels are supported by governments. So any government that would have such chemical material can hand it over to those.
The experts say that they've tracked nothing like this. It's a ton of sarin gas. It is launchers. It is rockets. It's a whole fleet, which happened to be, from time to time, those kinds of armaments, those kind of munitions, happen to be in your bases.
No. This is realistically cannot be possible. You cannot use the sarin beside your troops. This is first. Second, you don't use WMD while you're advancing. You're not being defeated. You're not retreating. The whole situation was in favor of the army. This is second. Third, we didn't use it when we had bigger problems last year. Third, when they talk about any troop or any unit in the Syrian army that's used these kind of weapons, this is false for one reason, because chemical weapons can only be used by specialized units. It cannot be used by any other units like infantry or similar traditional unit. So all what you've mentioned is not realistic and not true. Definitely, so far as government, we have evidence that the terrorist groups have used sarin gas, and those evidence handed over to the Russians. Second, the Russian satellites, since the beginning of these allegations at the 21st of August, they said that they have information through their satellites that the rocket launched from another area. So why to ignore this point of view? So the whole story doesn't even hold together. It's not realistic. So no, we didn't. In one word, we didn't use any chemical weapons in the Ghouta, because if you want to use it, you would harm your troops, you would have harmed the tens of thousands of civilians living in Damascus.
Just to conclude this portion, Mr. President, will you allow more investigation? Will you allow UN investigators to come in, maybe to further investigate this attack? As you say, other attacks, there's something like 14 different attacks where accusations are being made on both sides, and even a UN team to decide on the culpability, the blame for this attack. You will allow those UN teams to come in?
We invited them to come to Syria first in March, and we been asking them to come back to Syria to continue their investigations because we have more places to be investigated. The United States is the one who made pressure for them to leave recently before they finish their missions. When we invited the delegation, we wanted this delegation to have full authority to investigate everything, not only the use of the sarin or the gas or the chemical weapons, but to investigate everything about who did it and how. But the United States make pressure in order to keep it only by was it used or not, why? Because I think the United States administration thought that if they are going to investigate who and how, they're going to reach the conclusions that the rebels or the terrorists have used it and not vice versa.
Thank you, Mr. President. Dennis.
Do you believe that Syria's position as a secular state could be at risk in this conflict?
Okay. Of course, when we have this kind of extremism and terrorism and violence, that will render the whole society into more closed society, more ideologically fanatic. And that's what they are doing. That's what the extremists are doing.
But what does it mean to have a secular state? I mean, there are questions about whether or not, you know, your position is authoritarian, whether you believe in democratic values. What does a secular state mean to Syria?
A secular state means to deal with its citizen, regardless of their religion, sects, and ethnicity. Because Syria is a melting pot. We have tens of different cultures in Syria. If we don't have secular states that reflect this secular society, Syria will disintegrate. So that's what it means, secular society.
Well, one of the notions about this very serious conflict is that it's a civil war. Would you agree with that characterization that you're involved in a civil war?
Civil war should start from the society, should start from within. Civil war needs...
So you're blaming outside interests.
It needs the clear lines, geographical lines and social lines and sectarian lines that we don't have in Syria. We don't have these lines. Sectarian war, or sorry, civil war, doesn't mean to have 80 or 83 nationality coming to fight within your country supported by foreign countries. What we have is not civil war. What we have is a war, but it's a new kind of war.
So, you're blaming outside interests then for the acceleration of the war. Now, there's just some statistics that have come out from IHS Jane's. They're a defense analyst group. They estimate the opposition is 100,000, 30,000 of which are hardline Islamicists sympathetic to the 10,000 Al-Qaeda-inspired jihadists. Now, any of these Syrian, are they all outsiders? Where are they getting their money?
First of all, no one has this precise number. This is exaggeration because most of the jihadists, when they come to Syria, they don't come through countries and they don't come through organizations. They just come by plane to neighboring countries and they cross the border like any other one and they just want to come to Syria for the jihad with the other jihadists. So nobody has these numbers. We know that we have tens of thousands of jihadists, but we are on the ground. We live in this country. What I can tell you that 80, and some say is 90, well, is difficult to be precise. We don't have clear data and precise data. 80 to 90% of the rebels on the ground or the terrorists are Al-Qaeda and their offshoots.
These are the rebels?
Yeah,
but you're not terrorists. You are not maintaining that all of your opponents are jihadis, are you?
No, not all of them. Of course, you have so many other different, but they are small. They are becoming minority. At the very beginning, the jihadists were the minority. At the end of 2012, and during this year, they became the majority with the flow of tens of thousands from different countries.
Where are they getting their money from? can you tell us right now?
Mainly from donations.
But where? For donations from where?
Everywhere.
Can you name nations that are donating?
In the Islamic world. No, they come from individuals, not from countries, mainly. Those al-Qaeda. We don't know if some countries support them directly. We don't know. We don't have any information. I have to be very precise. But mainly from donations from people who carry the same ideology in their minds.
You mentioned before that some figures that are given are exaggeration. Can you tell us now how many Syrians have actually died in this conflict?
We have tens of thousands of Syrians that have died, mainly because of the terrorist attacks, assassinations, and suicide bombers, the majority.
And how many are your government soldiers?
More than 15,000.
And how many are insurgents?
How many
insurgents or jihadis?
We don't have numbers because we cannot count them. So,
there are innocent people being killed in this, and you're the reports are that your government has bombed villages in which innocent people are killed. What about that, Mr. President?
What about the innocent people who are killed
by the Syrian forces?
The majority of the innocent people have been killed by the terrorists, not by the government. You cannot, not a wise government in the world that would kill its own people. How can you withstand if you kill your own people for 2 years and a half? While the West is against you, the regional country, many of them, are against you, and your people are against you while you're killing them? Is it possible? Is it realistic?
So you're saying you're not killing your own people, but your forces have launched attacks on villages where your own people have been killed.
No, actually what you're talking about is when the terrorists infiltrating residential area in villages and sometimes in the suburbs of the cities and within large cities, and the army has to go there to get rid of those terrorists. The army should defend the civilians, not the opposite. You cannot leave them free, killing the people and assassinating the people and beheading the people and eating their heart. When you go to defend them, you say that you are killing your own people. You don't. But in every war, you have casualties. This is war. You don't have a clean war. You don't have soft war. You don't have good war. That's
The international community reports that Syrian rebel forces opposed to you are equally, if not more, worried now about jihadi fighters than they were previously about your government. Now, in this new development, is there an opening for you to achieve a rapprochement with your Syrian opponents?
Yeah, here we have to differentiate between what you call opposition and the terrorist. Opposition is a political meaning, it's a political term. When you oppose somebody, like in your country, in any other country in the world, you have your own program, you have your own vision, you have your own grassroots, and you go, you propose whatever you want regarding the political system or anything else, and you can change that system if you oppose the other party. Opposition doesn't mean to carry weapons and kill people, kill innocent, and to destroy schools, to destroy infrastructure, and to behead. What's the relation between opposition and beheading?
Well, let me then, as a follow-up, ask you about diplomacy. What diplomatic moves are you prepared to make as confidence-building measures towards peace in your country?
Any diplomatic move without having stability and getting rid of the terrorists is going to be illusional, just an illusion. So any diplomatic move should start with stopping the flow of the terrorists, the logistical support of those terrorists, the armament support, and the money support. Then you have full plan. The Syrian could sit on the table, discuss the future of Syria, the political system, the constitution, the institution, everything.
Would that future include negotiations with the Syrian opposition?
Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't mean negotiating with the terrorists.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Now, but does it mean that you're ready for, let's say, a program of reconciliation with those who have opposed you? Are you ready for that?
Of course, we announced it at the beginning of this year. We said we are ready to discuss with any political party in Syria, inside Syria and outside Syria.
Let's take this down the road into next year. Would you be prepared to offer amnesty to all the Syrians who opposed your government?
They didn't breach the law. So if they oppose the government, they can come to Syria without amnesty. only amnesty should be offered to anyone who violate the Syrian law or breach the law. I mean, if you oppose it, it's not a crime. You have opposition within Syria.
Do you believe in amnesty as a path towards peace?
Yeah, that depends on to whom. If it's to whom they stain their hands with the Syrian blood, it could be as part of national reconciliation.
Would that include reparations to the families of those who were killed?
Yeah, it's not the president who should put all these details. I think the Syrian meeting of every faction or all the parties that could define all these details.
What would you say, Mr. President, to the millions of Syrians who are now refugees as you move towards a peace process? What will you do to say, please come home?
Of course, we want them to come back to their villages, to their cities, to their houses, to their homes. We want them to. But we have to help them with getting rid of the terrorists, because the majority of those refugees left because of the terrorists, not because of the government. Actually, we have refugees within Syria that's been helped by the government.
Let me ask you this. Have you spoken to President Obama?
Never.
Have you ever spoken to him?
Never.
Are you interested in speaking to our president?
That depends on the content. It's not a chat.
If you wanted to send him a message right now, what would you say to him?
Listen to your people. Follow the common sense of your people. That's enough.
And Pope Francis instructed the international community to lay aside the futile pursuit of a military solution. Do you believe the Pope's advice is valid for your government as well as other countries?
Of course, we invited every militant in Syria to give up its armament, and we offered amnesty to whoever lay down his armament and wants to go back to his normal life, to his normality as Syrian citizen. Of course, we believe in that.
Thank you. Now, before I give this back to my colleague, reporter Greg Palcott, I want to ask you a question that's been bothering me and perhaps other Americans. Not everyone who is watching this interview today knows that you're a doctor, you're an MD, and you've done this before you were president. As you know, doctors take an oath never to do harm to anyone. That's a direct quote from the Hippocratic Oath. Does a doctor give that up when he takes political office?
First of all, doctors take the right decision to protect the life of the patient. So you cannot say that they don't do harm physically, because sometimes they have to extract the bad member that could kill the patient. You could extract eye, you could extract leg, and so on. But you don't say that he's a bad doctor. It's still a humanitarian job, whatever they do. The same for a politician, but in a larger scale. A doctor deals with one patient. The politician should deal with the public, with millions or 10 of millions, and so on. So the question is whether your decision should help the life of the Syrians or not in such a situation. Nobody likes the violence. We are against the violence. But what would you do when the terrorists attack your country and kill the people? Would you say that I'm against violence, or you defend? You have army, you have police, they have to do their job. This is the Constitution, and this is the role of any government. What did you do in Los Angeles in the 90s when you have rebels? Didn't you send your army? You did.
Greg.
Exactly. So this is the mission of the government. The most important thing is when you take the decision, whether it harms or not, it should help the majority of the people. It's better if you take the decision that could help everyone, but sometimes in certain circumstances, in difficult circumstances, you cannot. So you have to take the less harmful decision.
Thank you, Mr. President. Greg?
Mr. President, our time is limited, but I want to briefly go back in time a little bit. I was here in 2000 for the funeral of your father. You assumed the position of president, and at that time, Some people had real hopes for you as a reformer to change things, to bring more democracy to this country. In fact, however, critics and analysts said you pulled back. You pulled back to the point where now you were being branded other things than reformer. You were branded a dictator and much, much worse. How does that make you feel? How does it make you feel when people say you, to use an American parlance, you've lost the plot? That is, you've lost the trail of what you might have done then that might have avoided all of this now.
Yeah. So first of all, if you want to talk about the hope, I would say I'm the hope of the Syrians. Doesn't matter if I'm the hope of any foreigner person, whether he's official or any other one. So all the terms that you've used in your question should be referred to the Syrian to see whether they agreed upon these terms or not. At the end, it's not about the term, it's about the content. Doesn't matter what they say, whether he's dictator or reformer. Today you have propaganda. Do they say the same word about their allies in the Gulf states? Do they talk about the dictatorship in the Gulf state?
We're talking about Syria.
Yeah, I know, but I have the right to answer about the other regime or other states that they are much far from democracy than the Syrian state. Going back to your question, the reform is not the job of certain person in a country, whether the president or the government or the people. The president and the government can lead the reform, but the reform is a social process. It's a social process, and it's influenced by many different things, including the external factors, whether you have a war, whether you have stability, whether you have better economic conditions, whether you have very bad ideologies coming from abroad. So talking about the reform in the way that I presented at the very beginning, and I still believe in the same concept and values and principle, you should have democracy that reflects our own traditions. But democracy is not a goal, it's a means to reach the prosperity. And democracy based on accepting the other. When you have a closed ideology and many taboos that prevent you from accepting the other cultures in your country, you are going backward. Doesn't matter what the president do in that regard. Not the constitution, not the law, not any other process can make the democracy real one, realistic one in such a society. Only when the society makes this democracy, you can talk about it. It's a culture. So I'm still a reformer. I still believe in these same values. But if you go back to the history of the last decades, the most complicated situations happening in our region, this is one of the reasons why the democracy, not in Syria, in the whole region, is going backward. We are going farther from democracy, not closer.
But again, to stay with your country and to stay with a little bit of recent history, move back just 2.5 years ago this week. That was the first protest here in this country. Yeah. People said that was still a sign that people were unhappy, your own Syrian people, about your moves to democracy. And that was simply what they were asking for, more democracy, more reform. They weren't even asking for you to step down at that time.
Right.
Critics will say you moved in too hard, too fast, with tanks targeting protesters, torturing, et cetera, et cetera. That is the critique of yours. And you once again missed another chance.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that
let's ask a very simple question. If you want to oppress those people because we don't accept their request, why did the president himself, I said in one of my speeches at the very beginning of the conflict, why did I have to say publicly that those people have legitimate demand? This is first. Second, if we are going to use the force, why did we change the constitution? Why did you change the law? Why did you have now more than 15 new parties in Syria, political party? Why did you change so many laws that they asked for? Because we knew that it wasn't about democracy. If they asked for democracy, how did they kill some of those people? I'm not generalizing. Some demonstrators demonstrated for the reason that you've mentioned, but some others, they killed soldiers and they killed policemen in the first week of the conflict. What the relation between asking for democracy and killing and assassinating? So we have to be very precise in differentiating between people who ask for democracy and terrorists. This is first. Second, part of those people who were opposing the government at the very beginning, today they support the government against the terrorists. Because they ask for reform, but they didn't ask for terrorists. So you are talking about two different completely situations between the beginning of the conflict and today. So we're still moving forward in the path of the democracy. And part of the solution that I just mentioned a few minutes ago, when we sit around the table, the Syrian people will say, what's the best constitution? What's the best political system? Do they want it parliamentarian, presidential, quasi-presidential, and so on? So what laws do they want? Everything. So it's not the president who's going to set. If the people want to set up their new system, this is a democracy.
But you bring up a point that leads to my next question. Some people will say that you have just waged a war of attrition. That is, that you have waited and ground people down. And some of those that felt very peacefully that they wanted a change here in democracy, now after 2.5 years of fighting, they're willing to give in a little bit. And at the outset, you talked about terrorists coming inside, and now you've allowed or you've created a situation on the ground because of this long period for the terrorists to come here. My point is, you're not really changing people's minds. You're just forcing them into this box where we're 2.5 years on, we're 110,000 people dead, cities in ruins, and you're hoping that your people will just surrender to the idea. I mean, is that really where you wanted to go with this whole thing?
So the core of the idea that I created the atmosphere to invite terrorists to Syria.
You held on long enough. Held on long enough against the demands of people who wanted peaceful demands
for democracy.
From
the very beginning, we accepted the demands. From the very beginning,
you accepted the demands.
From the very beginning, before the terrorists or those foreigners coming to Syria, from the very beginning, in 2011, 2 months after, 6 days after the conflict, we said we were going to change. And we started the process of changing the constitution 2 or 3 months after the beginning. And we had the vote. I mean, I didn't change the constitution. The people voted, or let's say there was a referendum, and the people voted in that referendum for this new constitution. At the beginning of 2012, in February, before the end of 1 year of the conflict. So what you're saying is far cry from reality. It's completely different story. It's not none of these things happening in Syria. It's about maybe another country. What happened in Syria from the very beginning, we said we are ready. If there's any demand, we are ready to change everything. So what could a president do, or how could he succeed if the people are against him? How can he succeed? Just you want to be president just for the sake of being president? That's not realistic. It's impossible.
Do your tactics in this war, do you back your tactics in this war? I mean, a year ago we stood in Homs, one of your great cities, and we watched as your artillery, which was lined up around the outskirts of the city, pound again and again, relentlessly, the center of the city. You say you're going for the enemy, you say you're going for the terrorists, but that, some will call it indiscriminate shelling, has left many, many civilians dead, and frankly has left that city and many of your other great cities, like Aleppo and others, in ruins. I mean, is this the way to go after, if you think there are some terrorists out there, the terrorist enemies of your state?
So it's like if you say that when the terrorists infiltrated some area or attack certain part of any city, that the civilians would stay and live with them. That's impossible. Whenever the terrorists enter an area, the civilians would leave, unless they use them as a human shield. But in most of the cases, the civilians would quit their area because of the terrorists. And that's why you have so many refugees. So in most of the cases, the Syrian army attack area where there's no civilians living in it. In most of the cases, you can hardly find civilians with terrorists. They cannot be.
With a rough estimate, Mr. President, of the total of 110,000 dead so far is at least about 50,000 civilians. You're saying there were 50,000 human shields? You're saying that those people were in the wrong place?
First of all, what's the source of your information?
That is a breakdown by analysts who look at these numbers. It's lower?
Analysts from the United States, living in the United States, or living around. You can only talk about facts. We cannot talk about estimations and allegations.
110,000 is a fact that everyone agrees with.
Of course, as I said, we have tens of thousands of dead. I didn't say this exact number for one reason, because we have thousands of missing people. You cannot count them as dead. Did you know that they are dead? It's a war now. So talking about the number, we have to be very precise. You're talking about the numbers as spreadsheet. without knowing that they are family. This is tragedy. We live with those people. This is a human tragedy. It's not about numbers. It's about every family in Syria lost a dear one, including my family. We lost a member of family, we lost friends, that's why we are fighting terrorism. So should we allow the terrorists to continue without fighting them? This number, if it's close to the real number, will be so many folds, will be millions, not hundreds of thousands.
We don't want to get lost in numbers because, as you say, it's very true, a human issue here. But again, you use the figure of 90% of the opposition, the rebels, are al-Qaeda. You stand by that, 90%.
80 to 90, no one has exact number. You don't have the exact number because they are coming, flowing irregularly.
You don't think that's too high? I mean, people are putting that lower, at least 50-50. And one would say that if at least it's 50-50, you have some opposition to deal with.
Which people? I'm sure not the Syrian people. No one in Syria say they are 50-50. From abroad, maybe. They have their own estimations. But at the end, it's our conflict. We live here. It's our country. We can tell how much. But 50-50, how did they count it?
But again, just to sum up what you've been saying, in one quote you said, the opposition has been manufactured from abroad. Do you really feel that? You really feel the opposition in this country to your government has been manufactured from abroad?
It's not feeling, and it's not about how I feel. It's about what facts are presented in front of us. If they don't have Syrian grassroots, because we have oppositions in Syria that they have grassroots. Why do we have opposition abroad? How do they live? Who give them money? How they are financed? And we all know that they belong to some to the United States and Britain and France and Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Real opposition only belongs to the Syrian people. As long as it doesn't belong to these, to its people, it's made by other countries. That's simple evidence.
Thank you. Yeah. Dennis.
I just in listening to this exchange that you've had with Greg Palcott, there's one thing I want to be really sure about.
Yeah.
Are you minimizing the deaths by saying, well, you know, it's not 50,000, it's 40,000 or 30,000. Are you minimizing?
We cannot minimize it because in every house you have pain today. In every house you have sadness. You cannot minimize whether this number or higher number. It's a tragedy. We live in Syria. It's a killing. But we have to talk about the reasons. Who killed those? Not the government. The terrorists. We are defending our country. If we don't defend, this number will be manifold. That's what I meant.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. Now, looking at a broader picture here, this is a watershed moment. It appears to be a watershed moment. That for the world, from here in war-torn Syria, a new roadmap towards world peace may be developing by starting with you relinquishing your chemical weapons and then moving forward with a concrete plan for peace. In Syria. Do you think that we are at that kind of a moment?
You're talking about the situation within Syria. There's no direct relation between the chemical issue and the conflict within Syria. It's completely different. So if we want to move toward a political solution, we can, but that's not related to the chemical agreement.
I understand, but the fact that this chemical issue has brought the world together to finally pay attention. Is this a moment you can build from?
That depends to a large extent to the countries that are supporting the terrorists in Syria.
Before I go back to Greg, there are a lot of countries now involved in this process. Not just the US and Russia, but Iran, Israel, Turkey, and even China. So much depends on serious cooperation with the Geneva process. Are you prepared to make sure that this opportunity doesn't fall apart?
We supported Geneva process from the very beginning, and we cooperated with the UN envoys that came to Syria. Actually, the one who put obstacles, not Syria, neither Russia or China, it was the United States for many different reasons. One of the main reasons that they know that they don't have real oppositions abroad. They know this. This is one of their main problems because the core of Geneva conference is to be based on the will of the Syrian people. So whatever we agreed in Geneva, up in Geneva, is going to be proposed to the Syrian people. And if you don't have grassroots, you cannot convince the Syrian people to move with you. This is the American problem with their puppets, to be very clear and very frank.
Thank you, Mr. President. Greg?
And following up on that, Dennis and Mr. President, others think, indeed, that in fact there is a way forward here, that you are, for the first time in this last 2.5 years, speaking seriously to the international community about a negotiating track, granted just a narrow track of chemical weapons. And in fact, there could be the possibility of longer range talks. Could you be a part of that? Or if your strong allies and basically the sponsor of this new wave of discussions and negotiations, Russia, feels that perhaps it would be more helpful not to have you in the position, what would be your stand? Are you in this to the end, or if it's more, if it would facilitate things for you to step aside and for the good of your country, would you do that as well?
Being here or not being here in that position as president should be defined and decided by the Syrian people and by the ballot box. No one else, whether friend or opponents or enemy or any other one, have a word in that issue. If the Syrian people want you to be president, you have to stay. If they don't want you, you have to quit right away. Right away. With the conference or without conference. That's self-evident. We don't discuss it. And I said it many times. So no one has to say that. And the Russian never tried to interfere in the Syrian matters. There's mutual respect between Syria and Russia, and they never tried to involve themselves in those Syrian details. Only the American administration and their allies in Europe and some of the puppets in the Arab world repeat these words, whether the president should leave, what the Syrian people should do, what kind of government. Only this bloc interfere in the matter of sovereign country.
I know you said that there are elections scheduled here, at least, in 2014.
Exactly.
And you would stand for those, and you would see if the people would decide for or against you, and those could be conducted in this current atmosphere?
You have to probe the mood of the people and the will and the desire of the people at that time to see whether they want to run for presidency or not. If they don't feel that they are positive, you don't run. So it's too early now, because you have something new every day. It's too early to talk about it. Before the election, I can take my decision.
Dennis.
Mr. President, according to the New York Times, President Obama has said the greater goal with respect to Syria is to curb chemical weapons use and proliferation of chemical weapons worldwide. Do you believe this could be a chance to reset Syria's relations with the United States?
That depends on the credibility of the administration, any administration. And that depends on the U.S. administration's.
But you're not saying our president doesn't have credibility. I'm asking you if this is an opportunity for you to reset relations with the United States.
As I said, the relation depends on the credibility of the administration. We never looked at the United States as enemy. We never looked at the American people as enemy. We always like to have good relations with every country in the world. First of all, the United States, because it's the greatest country in the world. That's normal. That's self-evident. But that doesn't mean to say and to go in the direction that the United States want us to go in. We have our interest, we have our civilization, we have our will, and they have to accept and to respect that. If there's mutual respect, we don't have problem. We want to have good relation, of course.
Let me ask you some specifics with respect to going forward. Are you going to work towards a new constitution for Syria and guarantee more freedom for the people of Syria? Will you work towards that?
Our constitution today guarantees more freedom. But that depends on the content of the freedom. That's what the Syrian parties could discuss on the table. It's not the constitution of the president. It's not my vision or my own project. It should be a national project. So the Syrians should define exactly what they want, and I have to accept whatever they want.
For example, what do you think of free elections?
Of course, we have free elections now in this constitution.
Really?
Now we're going to have free elections next year. In May 2014.
Is there anyone else who could be president of Syria?
Of course, anyone who wants to be now, he can be
president. So you're not the only person who could preside over Syria?
No, I won't be the only. Be the only person.
And so you believe it's possible for Syria to have a peaceful transition without you in power? That is possible?
What do you mean by transition? Transition of what?
A peaceful transition towards a resolution of the conflict and the war. Is that possible with you not being in power, or do we have to end the war and then?
If the Syrian people want me not to be in transitional or permanent or natural or normal situation, this means it's going to be peaceful. Anything people doesn't want, it cannot be peaceful.
Let's look 5 years into the future.
Yeah.
What will Syria look like?
We have so many challenges if we get rid of this conflict. Of course, the shorter one is to get rid of the terrorists, as I said. But the most important thing, their ideology. We have no doubt that the existence of terrorists from all over the world, extremist terrorists, have left so many side effects within the hearts and minds, at least, of the young people in Syria. What would you expect from a child who tried to behead somebody with his hand? What would you expect from children that's been watching beheading and barbecuing heads and watching cannibals in Syria on the TV and on the internet? I'm sure it has a lot of psychological side effect and bad effect on the society. So we have to rehabilitate this generation to be open again as Syria used to be. Of course, I'm talking now about local focal, but if we leave it, it's going to be like a ripple in the water that expands into the society. This first. Second, we have to rebuild our infrastructure that has been destroyed recently, to rebuild our economy. And, as I said, to have a new system that suits the Syrian people, new political system and economic system and any other accessories regarding to these main headlines.
Greg?
Mr. President, as a reporter, I can just tell you what I see, and I've traveled around the country. I've seen this crisis go on. Right now, looking as you do at your country, with maybe 60 to 70% of your territory out of your control, maybe 40% of your population out of your control, 6 million people displaced, almost a third of your country has been displaced by this war. We've talked about the death tolls. We haven't even mentioned those who are injured. Do you see any way back? Do you see any way that the people could again be behind you in a totality? Do you see anything that you could do at this point to make up for this 2.5 years of hard, bloody, grinding war which this country has been put through?
Today, after the majority of the people experienced what the meaning of terrorism, I'm talking about a country that used to be one of the safest in the world. We used to be number 4 in safety on the international scale. We were number 4. To try to experience directly the extremism and the terrorism, those people wanted now to, they are supporting the government. So they are behind the government. Doesn't matter if they are behind me. The most important thing is to be behind the institution. So the majority is. Regarding the percentage that you put, it's not correct, the percentage. But anyway, the army and the police don't exist anywhere in Syria. And the problem now is not war between two countries and two armies that you say, I took that land and I liberated the other land and so on. It's about the infiltration of the terrorism. Even if we liberate or get rid of terrorists in certain area, they'll go to another area and destroy and kill and behead and do their routine. The problem now is the infiltration of those terrorists to Syria, and the most dangerous problem that we are facing, their ideology. This is more important than how much percent we have and how much percent they have. At the end, a large number of them are foreigners, they're not Syrians. They will leave someday or they'll be dead inside Syria. But it's about the ideology that they're going to leave. This is the worry of Syria and the neighboring country. And this should be the worry of any country in the world, including the United States.
Thank you, Mr. President. Dennis.
Mr. President, thank you for this interview. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to Syria.